The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. We're here in the studios. We have a couple of guests with us today from the Thumb Octagon Barn. They have their fall family days coming up. And our guests today include Margaret Sargent. She's a historian out there and knows all about what's been going on out there. And we also have Martin Kabotsky. He is with the Thumb Octagon Barn Fall Family Days effort. And we're going to be talking about what's coming up, when, where, and all the facts about the barn. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
The Thumb Octagon Barn, kind of a little treasure in the area, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's our 21st year holding this event. I myself, as chairman, I was co-chairman with our late Bob Hearn. Bob started it, and I came aboard after the third year of the event because I thought he needed help, and I had no idea this was ever going to blossom the way it did. And yeah, I'm glad I did. It's some big shoes to fill. I'm the chairman now, and I'm working on a new co-chairman to help me run this event. So,
when is the event, by the way?
The event is September 10th and 11th.
So it's not this coming Labor Day weekend, it's the following weekend.
The following weekend, yes. It's always the weekend after Labor Day. It starts out on a Friday night with our fish fry, which is done by our local person, Greg Tulaski. He's the fish fryers of the Thumb guy. Does a wonderful job. And nothing's open yet for demonstrations.
Basically, Friday is the fish fry.
Basically, Friday is the fish fry. Yes, it is. The only thing changed this year, we did on that Friday night, we will not have any music in the barn because of all the setups going on and all the traffic that's on the ground. We're just going to have just the fish fry only this year. So.
And I assume that's a fundraiser?
Yes, it is.
And that's what you use to help keep the barn and the grounds
that
and all
is
the
correct.
Buildings out there going.
That is correct. It's amazing how many people we feed out there in 3 hours. I think last year we fed 1,200 people in 3 hours. And the women out there and Greg do a hell of a job for us. So it's a busy day. So.
Do you just need to bring your appetite, or do you need
That's
to bring
all you have to do.
You
bring
like
your appetite. The price of the fish fry is $10 all you can eat, and the children under 5 are free. So if you got a good appetite for fish, come on out Friday night.
Very good. And then Saturday starts the actual events.
That's correct. It starts at 8:00 in the morning. The price at the gate will be $5 for adults. And six and older, and under six, it's free. There's a lot of events, demonstrations going on during the day. I'm amazed how many people in Huron County haven't been out to Fall Family Days yet. You're missing a big, big event. We have over 400 volunteers that come out there to help us, and we have a lot of high schools involved trying to get their hours they need for their citizens for college. So if you have any high school student out there that needs hours for their service hours, we have them for you. We can use you. And like I say, it's a busy, busy 2 days, and we have a lot of people involved with this project. So
a lot of the people that like to come out are people who are looking back at, you know, their history as well. And they
yep.
may not be the most mobile. Do you have to consider that when you're coming?
Wheelchairs? Oh, yes.
Do you have like little carts that can help them get around for some of the people in the most dire straits?
Well, we do have handicap. We use our golf carts to get the handicapped people on the grounds. And we do have a special wagon we use to load up wheelchairs and Amigos. We do not like golf carts running during the Fall Family Day event. We get handicapped people on the grounds with their wheelchairs and that, let them go up and down the aisles, because it's just so many people on the grounds, it's hard to have golf carts running around. And I just feel I've been to events where they do let golf carts go, and it's kind of a a big liability of accident to have.
That's, with all the people that I hear come to this, I would assume that's a big liability. But it might limit you as to like going through the house and that if you're, because there are stairs, there's no elevator.
Oh,
there's
no escalators. Oh, no.
Everything is the way it was back then.
The way it was, yes. If you we do not have any handicap accessible elevators or stuff like this. It's just the way the buildings were built back in the 1920s, and that's just the way it is.
But there's still plenty to see.
Oh, there is. Oh, yes. Oh,
I've
yes.
I've been out there. I've seen, you know, the, oh, yes. the stuff you have there. I mean, I know the house is beautifully laid out. They have dresses on some of the beds and stuff. When I went through to show you what the fashions were at the time, one thing I did notice is you had an old tube radio in there.
Yeah.
That kind of perked my interest when I went by.
Yep.
And you've got a garage there with some of the classic cars in it. There's also a generator in there, one of the first in the area to put power on there. There was just a lot going on at that farm, which was, as I understood it from when I was there, was kind of like the premier farm of the area at its time.
Yes. Well, Margaret here, she could probably give us a little history on that place too. What's going on, Margaret?
Well, you know, you mentioned that the barn is the centerpiece, or what a beautiful structure it is. And indeed, it is the centerpiece of our entire site. And we always want to keep that in mind because that is very, very special, that barn. Two questions that people most frequently ask are, how did that barn happen to be in that particular spot? And why did Mr. Purdy choose that location? And we are very fortunate because the original owners were James and Cora Purdy. Cora Purdy kept diaries from 1895 to 1954. And because of these diaries, we are able to know when different things happen. And we know that James Purdy had a couple of things in mind. First of all, he had seen a barn, an octagonal-shaped barn, while he was traveling in Iowa. And it became his goal and his mission to have one like that. Also, at the time, Mr. Purdy had heard that in Canada, they were mining peat to generate power. He was told that they could use the peat to generate power in a steam boiler to generate electricity. And at the time, there was no commercial electricity out on the site, and so, or even in the area. And on the property that Mr. Purdy was purchasing, eventually 560 acres, was a 43-acre mud lake, a swampy quagmire, a peat bog. And so Mr. Purdy had a plan. He thought, I'm going to be able to generate electricity for Owendale and for Gagetown. And he started to draw down the water from Mud Lake, and he was stopped and not able to continue doing that. But he did then make his own, build his own powerhouse, and he was able to generate electricity for his site. So the two things, the answers to the questions are, he had seen a barn like this in Iowa, and he was determined that he was going to have an octagonal-shaped barn. And he's very fortunate, not many of us can say this, that we have a dream and we are able to make it a reality. But Mr. Purdy was able to do that. And the other thing is why in that particular spot? And it had to do with Mud Lake. And so the barn is an absolutely beautiful, beautiful structure. But I have to tell you, it had become a wreck. It was in terrible, terrible condition. Back in the early 1990s, it was just awful.
And then it's probably getting close to being taken down. If it's not safe and structural, there's liability and everything else you got to deal with.
Well, the farm had had many different owners through the years. And the last people who owned the 80 acres that included the house, the barn, was the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources. And of course, they're not into restoration. They were concerned too about the liability, and they wanted the structures either torn down or moved to make room for a parking lot, they said, for the hunters. And it was at that time that a group of community volunteers came together, and our goal and cry was, save the Octagon Barn. We started out with just a handful of people, and we now have almost 800 people who are supporting our project with their membership. And it's an absolutely fantastic community effort. And as Martin said, when we have our activities, there will be 400 plus volunteers on site. But we can always use more. So if you are able to volunteer, we have some contact information on who you can call, if we can give you that.
Sure.
You can call Martin,
yes.
Although he's a very busy person.
I still have time to take a call.
Okay, so he will give you that number. And as I say, though we have a lot of volunteers, we want people to know that we always have room for one more. And as Martin said, we have sit-down jobs, and we have other jobs where you got to move about a bit. But we will have we will find something for you to do to help us out. And you know, as I said, the barn and the house had been very neglected for a number of years, and they were in terrible condition. So it was determined that we needed to have a source of raising funds. So we had our first festival back in 1994, which was a one-day event in Gagetown. And then in 1996, we started our first fall family, and it was just a day event. I remember that day very well.
I imagine you people were kind of worried, are we going to get anybody showing up and that kind of stuff?
You are absolutely right, but I woke up that morning to pouring rain.
Oh dear.
And I told my husband, I said, I'm sure they've canceled it. And I was listening to local radios and so forth, and I said, well, I'm just going to drive over and take a look. This group does not let the rain stop us. They had put a tarp over the door. They had figured out a way that they could prepare the food under the mow. A major problem, as I said, the barn was in terrible condition, and raining outside, it was raining just as hard in the barn. In some areas, so that was a problem. That first year we had, I think they said 500 people.
Yes.
500 people. The first time, can you believe, came out in the rain to see this barn and, most importantly, to show their support for our project. And we were working to save the Octagon Barn.
Now, you had mentioned two questions.
Okay.
I have a third.
Okay.
In that era, a lot of barns around here were built with, like, barn raisins. People would come over and you'd do it. You really didn't have plans. Was this architecturally done? Did he have somebody actually design it? So, because it looks like, you know, somebody just didn't slap this together. They had a plan.
They did. There were brothers in Gagetown, the Monroe brothers, and they were builders. And Mr. Purdy had hired them to, first of all, build the beautiful farmhouse for them. And so he decided that it was time for them to start to build his dream and make a reality. And these builders were the ones that did it and put it together. He even sent them to Iowa to get all the measurements, the specs, because no one had ever built a barn of this configuration. And you know, your angles are different. Everything is quite different when you're constructing a barn of this shape rather than a rectangle or whatever.
You're building a lot of this timber frame type of style where you got pegs and everything else. Everything's got to join in just right. There isn't a lot of wiggle room.
Absolutely. And you have been there, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And you have seen this. I still, to this day, No matter how many times I've done it, I still am dazzled as you walk through those doors and look at the view at the interior of the barn. It's really quite spectacular. These builders were excellent. Mr. Purdy set up a sawmill on the grounds. He knew that he was going to be able to get a lot of the timber off the land. There was a grove of tamaracks out to the east of the barn. And tamarack is a wonderful wood to use because the trees go very tall, very straight, and they're very moisture resistant. And so when you're there, be sure to check out the beams that are in the barn, especially the mow ladders, because those are tamarack. Mr. Purdy also conveniently owned the lumber yard in Gagetown. And he knew at the time that lumber was very reasonable. It was $18 per thousand board feet.
Oh, I think you've just put some of the local lumber yards in cardiac arrest with that figure.
Well, but we are going back to 1922 in that period.
When I look at the barn, it also looks like it has a lot of advantages above and beyond the normal hip roof barn we think of that era. You have that cupola up there that can vent that heat out, whereas in a normal barn, that hip roof just kind of holds it up there.
Yes.
The only problem with what you just said is that those windows in the octagonal cupola do not open.
Oh, they don't?
No. There is, Mr. Purdy had a very sophisticated ventilation system installed. And so when you're there, if you look, there is a ventilator on the octagonal shaped cupola. Then there is a ventilator on either side. And the purpose of that is to draw, because he had beef cattle that he raised in there, is to take out the offensive odors and bring fresh air back into the barn. So that was how, and then there are those magnificent very large doors on the east and west sides, and that does keep the air circulating. But none of those 32 windows in that upper level open. None of them.
They just bring good light into the
center. They do. And you know, I think that's what separates our octagon barn from others and makes it the fact that we have a dormer on each of the sides. And certainly all those windows add beauty to the whole structure.
And obviously, when you restored it and are doing the maintenance now to make sure it stays up there, you have to stay historically correct. You are in the Michigan, I understand, historical registry, working on the feds. So yeah. They have lots of strict rules, you know, that they want to make sure that what you're showing as a historic building is accurate to the period.
You know, one of the things that we're working on, you mentioned maintenance. Believe it or not, the restoration of the barn started back in 1996.
Yeah.
And anyone who does any building knows that eventually you have to restore and replace. Mm-hmm. And that amount of time, and interesting that you should mention it, the windows is the project that they are working on right now. And some of those windows, though they were repaired and installed new in some cases, are deteriorated, and so they have to replace. I think they have 12 windows on order because they could not use the old ones. And so this is why, you know, the buildings aren't just there. You have to work and pay for maintaining them with material. We are fortunate that we have a wonderful group of volunteers who do a lot of the restoration work. But there are sometimes things that come along that we have to have outside help getting something. Like I was just out at the barn the other day. They're working on the 30 windows on the lower level, and I said, who's going to do the windows in the octagonal shaped cupola? You know, who's going to do that? And they said, we'll get it done. We'll, you know, it'll get done.
But people don't think of all the work that has to go into that. I mean, it's got to be done as it kind of was back then. You can't go and just get, you know, super glue and nails and stuff. You need glass that's appropriate to the period. You need to do the joinery the same way. If they used nails originally, you have to get the cut nails or whatever they used at the time, just to keep that authenticity up.
Right, and we work very hard at that, very hard. And that is especially true when you go through the beautiful, pretty home or the powerhouse. If you are visiting, you want to for sure check out the powerhouse, because when I started talking about the peat, if you go into the powerhouse, you will see bricks that have been made out of peat. You will see a boiler. You will see the generator, and eventually you'll see what Mr. Purdy had to resort to before commercial electricity. He used a 32-volt Dalco system.
If I remember, there was like a water pump there too to get it to the house. I mean, that was running water in the house long before, you know, when everybody else was doing the Timmy and Lassie with the crank pump. They had running water in the house.
I'm not sure that the powerhouse was responsible for getting the water into the house.
I don't think so.
Either. No, I don't believe so.
There was
so.
A pump outside of it. I thought it was powered by the generator.
They had to have a reservoir of water for the steam. You know, they had that, which was used. The water from that was used to keep the steam powered engine going. But you know, all that we have done out there takes time and money. And that's what Fall Family Days, we started out having just an event in Gagetown. It expanded to a one-day event out at the site, and now it has become spectacular. From 500, we now, generally speaking, have 15,000 come to visit in little Gagetown. It is really... show place.
And they're all coming from all over the state now,
too.
Yeah, that's what's amazing.
And it must be hard to get the craftsmen who can do this work. I mean, everything today is drywall. You have plaster, maybe horsehair plaster, I don't know. But, you know, there's not a lot of people know how to work with that stuff and make it look right. And you've got to find these people to help restore it if you get cracks or you get a, you know, piece of it starting to come loose, so they can put it back on and you know, moldings and stuff. A lot of that was plaster work, not the wood, or I think we're using styrofoam now.
Well, we were very fortunate that along about 1996 in there, we were kind of floundering out there, not knowing what direction to go. And we knew that it was important that we demonstrate to the community that we were serious about restoring this. But the best thing of all that happened is a very fine carpenter, builder, started to volunteer with our group, and that was Bob Hearn. And the other thing that happened simultaneously was that we were beginning to have an Amish settlement starting up in the Thumb. And Bob, along with Amish men who know the craft, who know building, began to work on the restoration. So in that regard, we were very, very, very fortunate, number one, to have Bob Hearn. And what you talked about, attention to detail, he did that beautifully. And he worked with the Amish men. And you know, we had put out bids for contractors, and they were prohibitive as to financially what we were going to be able to do. But when the Amish men began to work with Bob, it was just amazing to see section after section of that roof replaced. And since we are on the, you know, the next area after the windows to be restored, we need a new roof on the barn already. And we have the asphalt shingles. And there was a big debate to go steel or the traditional shingles. And the decision was made, because it is an historical site, it will be shingles. that we will go on the roof.
Asphalt shingles.
Asphalt shingles.
Yeah.
And they will be beautiful emerald green.
as the barn has been green and white for so long.
Yes, it has. And now that is, I remember back to when we began restoring, and as I say, it was important to show the community that we were serious about this. The first section that they restored was on the southeast corner. And when they put those green shingles on, you could see that from Bay City Forestville Road. And people said, those folks are serious about this. and our support increased tremendously. We have sponsors that help us so that we can cover the expenses. Martin, you know how many sponsors we have this year? And
yes, we do. We have an increase of 10 more from last year. We're up over 188 sponsors, in fact. And what this helps us do is, say if we do have a rain out, it covers our expenses to run this event, because Margaret was just amazed what our expense total was last year. I mean, just to do a big event like this, it's over $40,000. And because of the insurances we have to getting, the permits, and all the other food supplies. But this event, it just amazes me, because like I said, I came aboard on the third year we held this event because I felt sorry for Bob. And that was the biggest. I never, like I say, when I started this event with Bob, we drew 1,500 people. Then I went to 3,000. Then I went to 7,000. Then I went to 9,000. I kept telling, oh my God, and when is it going to stop?
And then you went to 2 days.
Yes,
great.
Right.
You had so much overflow,
right.
You can't do it all.
Right, and now, because we're talking about having a 3-day event, I said, no, I think we have to just stick it with the weekend. And we have, amazingly enough, we have over 200 vendors now that come out there and crab people. And there's always a waiting list. And we take the waiting list, and sometimes we have people, because they're already reserved from when they come to this event, they reserve for their spot for the following year. And if they back out, we have always have a person to fill that spot. And that's a big crowd pleaser, because they come from all over the state to our flea market. They say we have one of the best. And then another thing is new this year, our theme is Our Wonderful World of Water. And we'll have a theme tent set up with the DEQ showing the dangers of losing our water and different demonstrations. And we have one big demonstration this year that's going to take place. Is a guy drilled a well for us, two wells, in fact. And he's going to use one of those wells to run a well demonstration to show the people how a well is drilled. And every so often, he's going to have the water go 20 feet in the air to get the kids excited. So we hope it's kind of a warm day, so they want to get wet. They got to get cold. But
that's, strike soil, you've got the restoration
yeah.
covered.
Now, we can mention that that's Frank Franzel. Franzel's
well drilling. He's going to do that for us. He made a generous donation.
Yeah.
He drilled a new well for the house, and plus drilled that well down there. But he's excited because he's picking up a welding rig out of Massachusetts that was made in the 1920 era. He's going to have that running. So that's another antique that people never seen. And another thing this year is our grain elevator. We had a generous donation to add on to the grain elevator. And my friend Louis Wehrman, he's so excited about this project. We're going to have live demonstrations going on with the machine we used to use in the grain elevator. Expand it.
You've got a lot of live demonstrations going on.
Oh, yes, we do.
You've got the sawmill going. I remember seeing that, and that's that huge blade that's taller than I am.
Yeah.
Spinning around, and it's like,
yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
You had a blacksmith shop.
Yes,
going.
We do. That's going.
Pounding on the metal and the sparks of flying.
Yep.
And I don't know if you have stuff for this time of year, but when I was there, you had maple syrup thing going.
That's going.
Showing how
sorghum.
That's
sorghum.
Sorghum syrup.
Yep.
And they were showing how that's distilled down into a sweetener. And you've got a schoolhouse, you've got a store, you got all kinds of stuff there that you've brought in that weren't original to the property,
right.
But are original to that era to try and show how life was during that time.
Well, we have a apple cider building we put up 2 years ago, and the apple cider press was donated from the people of Port Hope. and that press used to run in Port Hope. We have that all running. And last year, we just couldn't keep up pressing apples for the kids out there because they just love to put the apples in the press and watch the apple cider come out. And that's been a really crowd pleaser there.
That's about as fresh as you can get it.
That's right.
It is. Now, you've got to be sure and tell them about the potatoes.
Oh, yeah, and the potatoes. This year, we have our potato digging back. And just to tell you a little short story on these potatoes, we have the people pick the potatoes after we dig them for them. They go out there, pick the potatoes, and they give us a donation for what they pick. And one day a guy had a big bag of potatoes carrying to the car, and he says, "Can I ask you a question, sir? Do you know anything about potatoes?" I said, "Yes, I do." He says, "When you have mashed potatoes, how do they smash these things up to make..." I said, "We just throw them underneath the tire of your car." He says, "Seriously?" I says, No. I told him how to do it, and he was just overwhelmed. He learned something that day, how to make mashed potatoes. I just told him, you got to cook them and go to the whole
thing. And that's a sign of our times, the skills we've lost. Ancestry, the days before everything was taken out of the fridge or out of the freezer or to the restaurant to buy it. All of this stuff was done in the home. The homemakers had to know how to preserve it, how to cook it, and cook it very well, from what I recall, because my aunt had a farm up near Alpena. I remember as a kid, great food all the time.
All the time, yeah.
Well, just to tell a little, our mission is to educate the public on how farming and agriculture worked back then, how our grandparents did it, and how the things are done today versus how things were done in the past. And that's our mission. And you'll be amazed, like when I wear this shirt for school tours and I'm walking out at other farm shows I attend, and if you see a little guy, he'll look at you and say, "I know you." And he says, "How do you know him?" He says, "I seen you at the barn, and I'm coming back this fall with my parents." So we do turn these little people on, and they're just overwhelming. They want to know how a cob of corn is, what a cob of corn is, and stuff. It just amazes me how these kids are really paying attention to what we do out there, and they come back every year. Yeah, I mean, I impress a lot of trustees that help us out there, and they always come back. And
if you're going out there and for your first time and you're not really sure where it's at, either travel down Bay City Forestville Road or Sebring Road, and there are signs.
I got to correct you on that though.
Really?
Since we have our new parking lot, we've been stressing that in our advertisement. The only way into the event now is off of Bay City Forest Road.
Off Bay City Forest.
Because Sebring Road, we have the road sealed now because of the new parking lot. We can't have traffic go by the event.
So Bay City Forestville Road, there are signs just before you get into town as you're heading to the west.
Yes.
That say the barn is this way, you hang a right, I believe, and you go
Ritchie
up
Road.
The road about a mile and a half or
correct.
Two, and then you're there.
Yep. It's a half mile off of Bay City Forest Road to the north. And
look for the green shingles.
Yep, and there'll be signs up there pointing you in the right direction if you're coming from Unionville or if you're coming down from Cemetery Road. But last year we had to make the change because of safety. We have because of our new parking lot. We have a new parking lot. That's the only way it works. You have to come in off of Bay City Forest Road. So.
And last year at this time, Martin was totally stressed out about the parking because he just was not sure how it was going to work. And let me tell you, it was absolutely very professionally done with the team of volunteers, and you also have the mounted
posses. We have all the posses from here and Sanilac and Tuscola working with us now, so they're a big help for us directing traffic out there and making sure everybody's safe, and that's my main concern is safety.
Fall Family Days is a big event for you, but you also do something elsewhere in the year for the students.
Yes,
they come
school
by
tour.
Buses.
Yes.
They come out there and they were just buses galore. It looked like a bus rodeo.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. That's our school tours that we have. And that is a wonderful educational field trip for students.
And they come a long way from those, too.
Yes, they do.
I've seen buses with a lot of names that are not from the Tri-County area.
No, they come from Elmont last year. So that's a long ways. And Diane Rapson does a wonderful job of that. And that's where the theme starts, is with the school tours, and it finishes up with Fall Family Days. And they have a fellow there out of Croswell, am I correct? Greg Alexander.
Yeah.
And he's with the Drain Commission, so he has a lot of people he can draw in from the DNR and the DEQ, because he works with those people to help us put a good program on every year.
And I think they're hoping that there will be a representative from the Water Resource Committee.
Yes,
and
yes.
I think Greg is a part of that group.
Yes, yes.
And they're going to have the theme tent should be very interesting. We did not know when that was selected how important water was going to become to Michigan after the situation
yes.
in Flint. So
yeah, yeah.
Turned out to be an excellent theme.
So anyhow, we have another thing I'd like to tell you. We will have our big farmers breakfast, which is put on by our KC out of Carroll. They do a wonderful job with this breakfast. And
is that Saturday or Sunday?
It's Saturday from 8 to 10 mm-hmm. and Sunday from 8 to 11. The prices for the breakfast are $7 for adults, children under 12, $5. And like I say, it's a good farmer healthy breakfast. And you can't miss it. So.
And it's going to give you the energy you need to see all the stuff that goes on there.
That's correct.
If you don't have the wheelchair or the handicap accessible things that you are providing when you can, because
right.
You only have so many resources, there'll be a bit of walking.
Oh, yes.
There will be, yes.
Yes, there is. And there's another thing, is don't can't forget about the homemade donuts.
Oh,
dear. And the homemade pop.
Is that going to be near the cider?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
They can't go better than that.
Yeah, and then the homemade ice cream put on by our local car club. And we also have homemade pie to go with the homemade ice cream, too. So,
So bring your appetite as well. And it's all delicious. But nobody can ever, I remember Bob saying that those donuts are just to die for. They are so delicious.
Well, there's nothing better than fresh, hey.
No, that's right.
And when you're not using any preservatives, because you have to have a shelf life, because I don't think they'll have a shelf life. I think they probably fly off the shelves.
I don't know how you can.
They come out of the
donuts are being done by the Cummins family from Gagetown, and they have, without a doubt, the longest line
yes.
of anyone that's there, and it goes on. People know 5 o'clock is closing time. They're still in line to get those donuts.
Yes.
And They are really delicious.
Yep. And the another thing is our bean soup. I know when we walked in the door here today, the secretary asked if we're going to have our famous bean soup. I said, yes, we are. And they sell out so fast, they just can't make enough of it. The gentleman that does it for us is Dan Waltz out of Pigeon Bayport area. And him and his wife do a super job. I mean, I've seen people take cups of it back to their car to eat at home. I mean, it's just amazing. So.
Well, and that's one of the things, is that, people make stuff at home. It's a lot more difficult to make it in a huge batch. And these people that you're bringing are experts at doing this and doing it well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you can look at a recipe and say, oh, this feeds six, so I'll just do it 10 times and it'll feed 60. And it isn't going to turn out.
No, it isn't.
There's a little extra to it that you need to know to make sure everything cooks right. And you have to make sure it's cooked right, because you're an organization. You want to make sure everybody's healthy when they're done with it.
That's
so
correct.
They've got all kinds of safety things to meet. And it's just amazing that people have the skills yet to do that.
Well, we are very, very careful in that regard, and adhere to all of the health department, guidelines and rules, and have inspections and so forth of the area. So we're very conscientious about that regard. One of the things that this barn does is it brings the community together. And you see people look and say, oh, haven't seen you for ages, and they go up and you see hugs, and people are so excited visiting one another. And that's what's very, very special. And I remember back when I was talking with folks in the community, and I happened to interview a couple of very special ladies. One was 102 and one was 93. And I asked them how life was different now than it was years ago. And one of them said, after thinking for just a bit, neighboring. She said, people don't neighbor like they used to. But they do with the Octagon Barn.
Texting was a wave and a hey you to the neighbor.
And you know, that is a wonderful thing that you see people, you know, they do have their things going and their phones ringing and all that stuff. But basically, they are visiting. And somewhere I think that James Purdy is so happy. He referred at one time that this was his dream of building an air castle. And I think that Mr. Purdy is very happy that all these people are enjoying and loving his air castle.
I think there are a lot of people out there, just like you have people who go anywhere to look at a lighthouse, there are some people who look at amazing barns, you know, that aren't just the typical, and you've got a gem right here.
Yeah.
I love that you say that, a gem, because that's the way we feel. This is very special. And to think that it's right here in the thumb of Michigan. It's a very, very special thing, and it is a little jewel right there, somebody said, in a cornfield. But it's a beauty.
And just to add to this, I just feel that as many people as I talk to here in the Thumb area, I always ask the question, if I don't know somebody, have you been at the Octagon Barn? No, we want to someday. So I'm just challenging you people out there, come, because I had people that never were there, and they finally showed up, and now they come every year because they said they never knew we had a sushi event going on, and they were amazed of all the demonstrations we do. And so I just challenge you people out there to make this the year. And my friend Bob is looking down on me right now. He was the guy that started all this, and we're going to have a little tribute to him on Saturday. So people were asking me if we're ever going to do this. Yes, we are. So just come for him, too, and because this was his special project. And I kind of stepped into his shoes now. I'm trying to follow through, but I'll never replace Bob Hearn. But this man was wouldn't have been for him showing up for the friends, I don't think that barn would be there today. So just to recognize him and for doing all the stuff he did there, we're just going to have a little tribute for him on that Saturday afternoon for a few moments. And so I just hope everybody out there can just come out there, because you are missing something that you've never seen in your life. So.
And what dates are it again?
September 10th and 11th,
Saturday and Sunday.
We open up at 8.
8, and there is a breakfast each of those mornings. And there's a fish fry Friday night.
Yep.
Just a fish fry.
Yep, that's right.
It's a precursor and a little fundraiser to help with the cost of putting it on.
Right.
And it's a great experience, the big walk back in time without having to walk anywhere else but here in the Thumb. And I do hope you get a good turnout. If you can let people know, if they want to volunteer, how they can get in touch with someone.
Okay, they can call me at 989-551-0526, or call the number that's on the brochures out there. That's my wife's number. She kind of being my secretary this year. Her number is 989-658-8450.
And I assume if you didn't jot the numbers down, didn't have a pencil handy, you probably have a website.
Oh, yes. Yes, we do.
Yes,
we do.
You can just search Thumb Octagon Barn. I'm pretty sure that it's going to know where to take you.
ThumbOctagonBarn.org. You can get it.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks for being with us. I hope you get a great turnout. I hope you have good success and can keep the barn up. I know it gets costlier and costlier as the skilled trades that keep it original are getting fewer and far between, but it's a great effort, and we thank you for it.
We thank you.
Thank you for having us. Thank you very much. Yep.
Our guest today on the program, Margaret Sargent. She's the historian out there at the Thumb Octagon Barn. And Martin Kubatsky, he is with the Thumb Octagon Barn and is putting on the big event coming up the weekend after Labor Day weekend.
Yep.
And stop on out and see all they have to offer. I assure you, I've been out there. There's a whole lot out there that you won't believe that packed into this property. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.